Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
Fireworks. Dumma kebab.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey tennis?
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey tennis?
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick. With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey tennis?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey tennis?
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn. Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the Oast House.
Keep it down, love.
Hi gang, and a very relaxed welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Turn off, wise up, muddle through.
Nick Alder.
It's not as if he's being cuckolded, he's being magpied.
And Tom Stab.
Aiming, you fucking dick.
So, yes, we're going to be tackling episodes 16 and 17, the first of which sees Alan visiting a spa. But before we get to that, we've got a couple of weeks of this series left. And those of you that listen to our This Time episodes will know that we asked you, the dear listener, to recreate some of your favourite moments of that series and send through the audio to us so we could do something a little bit special. So we're going to do something very similar. What we'd like is for you guys to send us you doing renditions of the Oast House theme tune. There's been lots of feedback online that Alan's theme for the podcast series is one of the most notorious earworms of 2020. So if you'd like to sing a bit or perhaps all of the theme and send it over to us, you can do. We recommend you do it in one of two ways. Either you send it to us as a voice note on WhatsApp to the Monkey Tennis hotline, which is 07923 600 017, or you save your file and email it to us at thepartridgepod@gmail.com. Over the coming weeks, we will hopefully compile a few of them and put them into some kind of magical medley for the end of the series. So thanks in advance to all of you for sending us your Oast House themes. So
is it fair to say that we're going to massively regret asking for this? It's going to be an audio car crash, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
That's also what I would say to people is if you could record it a cappella, that would be good, because with the audio bed, I think we're gonna not being able to kind of separate the audio from Alan singing and not just having the bass like we did for This Time or for the Black Beauty theme tune, for example. Please submit your renditions a cappella.
So, on to today's first episode, which is Spa. Alan coming live from a spa. I noticed with this one, he basically, so it's, I think it's a cold open again. He basically goes into the theme without even making a joke, doesn't he? Like, there's no laughs to be had before the theme kicks in, really.
But I guess the only thing that kind of happens is he doesn't even get to properly say where he is, because he's halfway through saying the word spa and he gets interrupted and says good morning. So it's kind of, it's a deliberately slightly obtuse introduction.
Yeah, a bit of a damp squib of a start, I thought, episode 16. Coming out the back of the theme, he talks about how much he likes the scent of lemon or grass or lemongrass, which, of course, are all completely different from one another.
So he's padding around in his complimentary robe and slippers with a rolled-up towel.
Now, he says that it doesn't come cheap, this spa break. So I had a look at the highest-rated spa in Norfolk on TripAdvisor. It's a place called Congham Hall Hotel and Spa. You feel Alan would probably go to a place where it was probably reviewed on TripAdvisor. He's been very vocal in the past on his preference for finding reviews on TripAdvisor. So he'd probably go to the best one listed there. And the price per person for the essential relaxation package there is £385 for two nights, and the ultimate escape break for three nights is £561. So if Alan is going there, he's right. It does not come cheap.
No, that is quite premium. Although you've got to imagine that he's emailed them in advance to try and negotiate a celebrity discount of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably used all his money from the Norfolk Milk Marketing Board to do that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed that while he's talking about how free the spa is and it's not full of rules, like a municipal pool, he gets told to be quiet because he's breaking a rule about being noisy.
Yeah, and as well, it's interesting that he's basically slagging off municipal baths, although we've seen Alan use public swimming pools quite a few times in recent years, so you can't really have that much of an issue with it.
I think his preference for spa seems to be that if you're quick enough, you can even have it off in the steam room.
Yep.
And that there's no sign that you can't bomb in the pool.
Yeah, very much taking the absence of a no bombing sign at a luxury spa to mean that bombing is encouraged.
Did you guys list the reasons why Alan chooses to do a bomb?
I've got one. It's to blow away the cobwebs.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's a relaxation technique for him. So it helps him deal with anxieties around niggling relationship worries, professional poverty, and loneliness. So quick bomb into the pool, that's all going to go away.
It's all gone. It's all gone. Yeah.
I also enjoyed the fact that Alan describes one of his favourite areas of the spa. Remember, his favourite area of the spa, the sitting area. Which is just sitting on some wicker chairs reading a magazine.
Yeah, oh, that was it. Yeah, he said it doesn't get much better than reading a magazine about other better places to go on holiday while you're in a spa. There's a fun little joke as well where he's talking about the relaxing whale song being played in the spa. Yep. Goes into some detail about how it's actually usually just humpback or blue whales that make that noise. And then, nope, beg your pardon, it turns out it's actually Bjork, which I thought was good because Bjork and Alan have previous, because they appeared together on Comic Relief that time, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
That line did make me laugh. Yeah. It was very good, I thought.
Oh, actually, no, sorry. I believe it's Bjork and Tony Farino, wasn't it? It was another one of Coogan's characters, yeah. I think. But still.
Are we at the point where a female patron has the misfortune of dropping a key card in front of Alan? Which in and of itself should be, you know, a pretty much uneventful moment, but... he makes it peak awkwardness by saying that she shouldn't have to bend over and that Alan could get it. So instead of doing the right thing and being, you know, chivalrous, he makes it awkward. It's an unpleasant moment.
The actual line is, you don't want to be bending over when the robes are this short with a chap behind you. So also the point is, Alan could move and not be standing behind her at that point as well.
And
he could save her dignity.
If Alan's robe is of an equal length, then surely she's about to get an eyeful of, perineum and scrotum.
That's
from
the next
Alan. Alan's got a little restaurant review here, hasn't he? He does a kind of an occasional restaurant review in the pod. He went to an Italian restaurant where he ate spaghetti and meatballs and cheesy garlic bread, so very gourmet. I liked his scoring system here. He said he scored it 5 in all categories apart from toilets, 1, which stank of stale piss. At no point does he actually explain if the marks are out of 5 either, so I'm not quite sure if this is a glowing review or an average one.
So Alan's eating at Casa Vicea in Heatherset, which according to Google Translate literally means old house. Again, I took to TripAdvisor. There are 12 Casa Vicea's restaurants around the world, ranging from exotic locations such as Croatia, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Cannes, Campania, Perugia, Brittany, Brazil, and Royal Tunbridge Wells.
Does that mean the one he went to is real? No, surely not.
What's the name of the town where the one he...
Heatherset.
Oh, right.
There is no Casa Vicea in Heatherset.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they could put in a real restaurant into this podcast and then give it 1 out of 5 for toilets being an absolute disgrace because they stink of stale piss.
Sort those and they'll be on to a winner.
Is it time for the big Alan versus Eamon Holmes banter off?
Yeah, well, just before that, you've got the bit about Alan just basically enjoying the fact he's not wearing pants in the spa, and that the options around that are you could cross your legs or just go and get pants from your room. And he also says that he likes to use the spa to open his mind like a Vicks nasal spray opens up your airways. I think Alan not wearing pants is actually quite disturbing. A recurring theme in this podcast, isn't it? There are a few different iterations of that.
So Alan is at a product launch for Massey Ferguson, who are obviously big in the farm world. So he's at a product launch and he's co-presenting with Eamon Holmes. Now, he has talked about co-presenting in previous episodes of the Oast House. And I thought it was interesting that he chose kind of Eamon Holmes. It got off to a good start, but unfortunately, Aim has basically come out and absolutely ribbed him and thrown him to the wolves. And normally that would be fine, but basically because Alan hasn't been pre-warned of banter, he's unable to kind of respond in the moment and as a result has fallen foul of Eamon's humour.
I just want to go back slightly when Alan's talking about basically asking Eamon if he wants to co-host this with him, that he says Eamon Holmes jumped or nodded at the chance. So the implication, obviously, big aim is too big to jump.
That's good. I like that this misunderstanding or this kind of banter off problem that they have, it's sort of indicative of a lot of co-presenting opportunities in the real world outside the APU, where either you've got two people presenting together, they're either kind of do a sort of, you're my mate, you know, very respectful, like talking each other up kind of thing. Or they do a sort of, I guess, like a kind of a George Clooney, Brad Pitt thing where they're basically just taking the piss out of each other, but in a lighthearted way. And this is a rare example with Alan and Eamon, where one of them's gone for the latter and the other one's gone for the former, and neither of them has warned the other. So it's very like, there's a lot of discord here.
I liked also Alan's examples of the banter that he would give to Eamon, given the opportunity, that he'd introduce him with lines including, look what the cat dragged in, and my particular favourite, here he is, hide your sandwiches. That's brilliant.
So Alan puts 2 and 2 together and gets 5, thinking that Eamon Holmes is high noon.
He held him against the wall by some of his throat. I thought that was a brilliant line about Eamon's pudginess.
I did like the description of Eamon where Alan says he can fly off the handle if he needs a nap or thinks you're about to touch his hair.
And also, Eamon had borrowed Alan's classic MGB but returned it with crisp crumbs all over the seat. I really like those sort of details in the story.
Eamon's getting an absolute pounding here. Yep. Do we reckon this is very much a kind of Alan yes, Coogan no sort of situation where he doesn't actually like Eamon Holmes, or they do have a bit of a sort of, I don't know, it seems funny that he does absolutely destroy him, like, quite rigorously and frequently in the APU.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I can't imagine them being mates, but also, like, is Coogan maybe going a little bit far with this? I don't know.
Because
no further than he did with Edmonds.
No, that's true.
Or Hammond.
That's the interesting thing. Like, so Bill Oddie has obviously, like, quite famously commented on the fact that he's a bit of a bit player in the APU. I haven't, not to my knowledge, I don't know whether Eamon Holmes has ever acknowledged it. So it'd be quite interesting to know kind of what he makes of it, whether he's baffled by it or kind of flattered by it, just because there's almost like a weird compliment to being one of the real life celebs that features in the APU, because it does mean to a certain extent you must be kind of entrenched in kind of like British life and British culture to get those mentions. But obviously, yeah, they're being absolutely savage to him every time.
I think that the Bill Oddie example is one where you probably wouldn't have really requested any form of permission, because it is such a throwaway comment, and in no way is it really derogatory upon his character. But as Alan has developed as a character, this trope of kind of building up or kind of ulterior personalities or alternative personas for these people, I can't believe there wouldn't be some level of engagement with people where you'd say, you know, are you comfortable if we kind of do this and it's all in good humour and they can obviously see it for what it is? But I'd be surprised if there wasn't some level of engagement.
I don't know. It's weird because, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't imagine you would have to ask for permission, because obviously it's a work of fiction. And I think, did we not talk about this on an episode before, that I think the Gibbons brothers' view on this is kind of like, if in the real world you complain about a fictionalised version of yourself in Alan Partridge fiction, like, you're going to be the one that ends up looking like a dick, because like you're worried by how it reflects on you anyway, so you kind of can't win.
I don't think they've asked for permission. I think this is just a bit of a cheeky thing that they can think they can get away with, because when you look at people who are actually appeared as themselves in the APU, like Monty Don and Emily Maitlis, their treatment was much, much softer touch than this going in on Eamon Holmes. And so I think to be in on the joke, they would almost have to pull some punches, and I really don't think they are here. So I think Eamon's on the outside of this joke.
Yeah.
I like that Alan says that a children. I think personally, I took this as a thinly veiled dig at David Walliams when Alan says that a children's book is the easiest way to make a lot of money without doing much work.
Yeah. That was my guess as well. That's a Williams dig,
or at least at the kind of recent trend of celebrities with no history in illustration or book writing, basically coming up with a story for a children's book. Because I suppose really with a lot of children's books, the skill is with the illustration, isn't it? The story is effectively about 80 words per book.
There's not much kind of narrative to them, and I'd say Alan's example is no exception with a Scottish Jack Russell called Jock, who's brilliant at judo.
Jock McRussell.
There is a difference though between what Adam is saying, like an 80-page, like 3 to 5-year-old, 6-year-old picture book, and what Walliams does, which is actually like full novel.
Right,
they are novels for a slightly older age group, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So there is a slight difference there, but this, I think, the point that Alan is making, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's basically, I think the latter of what you guys said, which is just a dig at generally the trend of people, celebrities bringing out children's books. Like, I could go onto Amazon now and go to the biggest selling children's books, and I reckon there's going to be at least 2 or 3 celebrities in there who have, for some reason, got commissioned to write children's books. But I think it's just a general dig at the trend rather than a specific one at Walliams.
Because I guess that's exactly the thing. It's like it's banking on the brand of the celebrity name. So it doesn't really matter what the quality of the story is. If it's a name that a parent knows.
I think if Coogan wanted to have a go at Walliams, he would mention Walliams specifically, because they must be mates. Their paths must have crossed numerous times over the last 20 odd years or so. So I wonder if they're mates. So Alan decides that he wants to disconnect from all things digital and do analog things. So he puts his phone in his safe, and I like this detail. He gives away his passcode. He just goes, put it in the safe, passcode, and says passcode, year of my birth. So he's immediately given away the code to his safe.
And also the location of the safe, and that he doesn't lock the French doors to his bedroom either. Which is such a great payoff when you think of all the other times in the series when he's bleeped out where the spare keys are, he won't let taxi drivers drop him at the door.
Very good.
And then he's actually given it all away like that. Brilliant. Oh, and did anybody note the examples of analogue things that Alan does?
I know one of them was making toast, which very much requires electricity at least.
Making toast, drinking tea, running, dancing, and having a picnic on his own in the garden.
Yes, and as he says, even NASA can't make a leaf. And then he was just busy marvelling at a leaf, and then just said out loud, there's loads of these, which I thought was quite a nice touch.
In this section, when he's going off on quite a tangent about the leaf as well, just a note here, his neighbour, he refers to his neighbour called Paul. Now, I realise at this point, is it me, or is every bit part male in this series suddenly called Paul?
Yes.
So you've got Paul the neighbour. There is a bank
Paul,
manager
Paul that delivers
jacuzzi
the eggs.
Later is also called Paul.
Yeah.
And
Paul that delivers the eggs and butter.
Ah,
and
good
I think
spot.
There's been a fourth as well, actually.
There's definitely 3 within the space of like 2 episodes. And I wonder if that's very deliberately a joke to see whether people notice. Whether it's purely coincidence and just bad episode ordering, or is the joke actually that Alan can't actually remember anyone's names, so for the purpose of this, everyone's called Paul. I don't know. But it is quite interesting that it occurred to me whilst I was like, hang on a minute.
Yeah, you would expect there to be a joke woven in at some point where he says, you know, I'm very busy and I can't be bothered to learn everyone's name. So if in doubt, you can usually say Paul and they'll just let it go, you know, something like that. But no clue. We're on to his adaptation of the popular phrase, turn on, tune in, drop out, which is Alan's, in this case, leaving digital things behind, is turn off, wise up, muddle through, which is so good. Really, like, inspirational. I also really enjoyed his tale of being in the jacuzzi at the spa and doing something that I'm sure we've all done at one point or another, accidentally touching another man's leg under the bubbly waters. But the man smiled back, which was a step too far for Alan, who then panicked, referred to his wife four times in a row, and then escaped.
Escaped.
So quickly, a quick question to the group. Alan's obviously talking about his perfect day. What is your perfect day? I'll start with Adam.
Oh, that's a tricky one. To tie it down to one day, maybe some sort of long bike ride in the countryside, perforated by a pub lunch, ending with some kind of box set marathon in front of a roaring fire. I'll take
that. Sounds lovely. Nick?
Mine would be I've won £1,000 on the scratch card. I go into the Sonos store and Kate Winslet is in there. She's separated from her partner. She's also buying Sonos. And she says, do you want to talk about Sonos in the pub? And I say yes. And then we just go and talk about Sonos in the pub.
Top tip for you, you could say to her, I've got a sound bar for you.
What I like about that story, Nick, is that the specifics of winning £1,000 on the scratch card. You can win any amount if you want. You can win £250,000, but no, you just got just £1,000.
Dare to dream.
And Tom?
I was quite taken with Alan having a spa day. I think I'd quite like to start my day perhaps with at a spa for the morning, you know, having a swim, sauna, follow it with a massage. And then basically, as long as it's a nice sunny day with a light breeze, perhaps temperature of around 26, 27 degrees, you know, just chill out with some mates, perhaps go to a pub that's playing crucially good music, no idiots around, and then maybe just, you know, a few pints, go for a curry. Bliss.
Keep your head down. Stay out of trouble.
So there's a lovely advert here where Alan is basically discouraging visitors to Norfolk from using public transport because it takes ages. I actually thought he had quite a compelling tagline for the end of this ad, where he says, choose the people you travel with, cars, which is great.
The way to enjoy Norfolk. I like that he described himself as the car laureate as well.
Yeah. It also reminded me of some chat that we've had off pod in the past where some of us are advocates of Uber Pool and the rest of us refer to it as the bus.
I kind of very much advocate for Uber Pool to come back as and when it's safe to do so, but I miss basically saving money on my taxi journeys.
It's not for me. Do you think Alan, is it a safe assumption Alan is the self-appointed car laureate, or is this some kind of Norfolk tourist board appointment that they've christened him with?
No, he'd definitely shout about it if that was the case. It's definitely self-appointed.
There's a nice Domingo in Little Oakley moment here where he's chatting to a man called Stephen Bovis. Irrelevant information, but he's eating melon with a fork. but crucially, he didn't want to talk on mic because he's here with another woman that isn't his wife.
Yeah.
So that game has very much been given away.
We found out that staff are refusing to let Alan into the flotation tank, so he's forced to create a salty bath / flotation tank himself. With a lot of salt and his room at the spa.
He's paid the kitchen £40 for a massive bag of salt.
And he talks a lot about how he likes his thoughts to be free range rather than battery. So he basically lies down in this bath and then just lets his mind wander. And I guess this is essentially Alan's take on meditation, isn't it? It follows the same principles as meditation, but his thoughts follow a very different path to probably what you're supposed to. I've got them in bullet point form here, if that's useful.
Yeah, go through them.
The first of his relaxed meditative thoughts is, better insure the car, followed by what's for lunch, followed by must call Bill Oddie, followed by I can't see the inside of my eyelids, followed by knees are cold, followed by bum is warm, hot actually, followed by if I get a heat rash, I'll have to cancel the massage, followed by that'll do, you can think too much.
I do like that he asks, how hot can a bum be?
I think there's one that you missed out as well. He says, at the end of that, he says, that's what I'll have for lunch.
Chicken.
Yeah.
Before he launches, before we get that kind of running monologue of his thoughts, he says that creating his own flotation tank, a salty bath with the lights out, he says it's like being in the Dead Sea, but not surrounded by those annoying people. Now, I thought that was quite a key line. The way Alan often describes essentially the general public, it's in terms of those people, these people, those annoying people. It reminded me a bit of when he takes the imaginary visit to Chris Rea's barbecue in I'm Alan Partridge. He says, come on, Lynn, let's leave, these people are starting to annoy me, even though it's something that's all played out in his mind.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it's just others, isn't it? It's just generic,
yes,
others.
Yeah.
These people.
And also, probably worth mentioning, a welcome return of thoughts spinning around like trainers in a washing machine in this section as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. A nice little payback. Is it time to move on to
Ken Minsk?
Yeah, Ken Minsk. I don't know about you, but I didn't see where Ken Minsk Day was going. It starts off incredibly innocently. Perhaps we can split it into two. So I'll start with how Ken's perfect day goes. So he picks a point on the map, although crucially anywhere, as long as it's in the home counties. Then he'll drive around and document all of the Victorian follies within a 30-mile radius. So far, so normal, but it takes a dark turn.
He then goes to hand out leaflets to sex workers before picking his favourite for half an hour of kisses and cuddles.
No mention on what the leaflets are. What leaflets do you reckon he's had?
Yeah. I had presumed when it got to that point that these leaflets were going to be very much like, you don't have to do this, let me show you a better life, support for sex workers, something, yes, along those lines. But it seems that it's basically, he's sort of advertising himself to sex workers? I don't really understand.
It could be some kind of information leaflet on Victorian follies, perhaps.
It's also that, I don't know, I mean, it's the kissing and cuddling for 30 minutes in a car. It's just, it's so uncomfortable and unpleasant to think about. And yeah, I would love to know what that leaflet is saying. And then the idea of like picking your favourite one, all from a man that's previously in the day been, you know, driving around the home counties looking at Victorian follies. I'm guessing that's what he'd open his chat with.
And presumably, if this is a regular perfect day for Ken Minsk, he must have covered all of the follies quite quickly. If he's not moving outside of the home counties area and he's doing a 30-mile radius every time, the follies, they must be sick of him.
He's very...
presumably, he sticks to the home counties, because if he goes any further afield, he'd have to find out where the local sex workers are, whereas with the home counties, he already knows where to go.
He's still in the catchment area.
It's it's very on brand for one of Alan's callers or listeners, though, isn't it? The slightly odd, dark turn to it.
Mm-hmm. There's a nice bit just following on from that, where which we get with Alan a lot, where he's trying to think of a word or a phrase and he's not got it quite right, and you think that he's forgotten about it, and he comes back way earlier in the episode, a good sort of 7 or 8 minutes ago. He was trying to remember the line that he'd written about Jock the dog, the subject of his children's book, and it was, Jock, you are the most something dog in the world. I mean, there were kind of a few jokes there. One is that clearly when he's talking about Jock, he's really talking about himself, and how charitable he is. And he says that he's convinced, the word he can't think of, Jock, you are the most something dog in the world, he's convinced it starts with a P, but it turns out that it's benevolent.
So at this point, Alan is back on the mic and he has a lisp, and it transpires that he basically chinned himself on the wet floor and he's lost a tooth and now has a fat lip. So one can only imagine what that must look like.
Well,
so
we've probably seen what it looks like on this time, really, haven't we?
Exactly. So I guess it's a cautionary tale. If you are going to do a flotation tank at home, please exercise caution.
And also perhaps a little gag on behalf of the writers and Coogan about Audible's ruthlessness in terms of when content is due to them, because he's had to turn this episode into Audible, and that's why he's had to finish the episode with a split lip rather than being able to wait for it to heal. Amazon will not wait for your injuries to heal, basically.
that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that yet.
So that's the end of his trip to the spa. We're on to episode 17, which, are not to spoil too much, is not only the longest episode, but I would say perhaps the most poignant of the series.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Certainly the most poignant episode of anything that opens with the line, there's a few trees over there and some over there and a dead sheep.
I did enjoy Alan talking about all of the different air qualities and likening them to bottled water. So Norfolk is blessed with being Fiji water, which is probably one of the most high-end bottled waters that you can buy.
Yeah, that's premium bottled water, isn't it?
It's up there, isn't it? Yeah. The home county is very much the Perrier. Sussex, he described as the Budwar, which
I don't know what that one is. No.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that. Buxton is Buxton. You probably take that. Adam in Bristol, you are Volvic, which again, I think you'd take that. You're a premium bottled water.
I mean, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think Volvic is very much supermarket water at this stage, isn't it? You're not going to be served that in a restaurant.
Just be grateful you're not Manchester, because they are very much tap.
He spends a good few minutes explaining how breathing works here, doesn't he? Which I thought was
not
a bit
a
long.
Fan of this. Not a fan
really?
Of this bit.
Oh,
no.
I thought it was so
I liked
good
it because it's
didn't do much for me.
But I like when he goes these kind of weird tangents when again it's one of these things where somehow the explaining the process of breathing and what the lungs do is suddenly it's like some kind of Hollywood action film.
Yeah, and I know that there's been some of these where you've sometimes said, Tom Stab, that you're less of a fan of them. And I think on half of them, I agree with you. And I think on half of them, I don't. I think this is one where I wouldn't agree, because I think this is really good. So when he's talking about, you know, breathing in oxygen, breathing out carbon, and then when he talks about breathing in the city, and it's like carbon monoxide, bits of dirt, diesel fumes, someone's BO. I just thought, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, I love that line.
So good.
We learned that he's been cooped up of late, which I thought was quite a kind of a lucky coincidence for listeners, because this was all recorded pre-COVID, so at least this kind of ties it to the current world situation. And there are increasing references to his troll, which I guess, as we're coming towards the end of the series, sort of indicates the narrative route that we're kind of gently being led down throughout the whole of the Oast House.
So Alan says that he likes to cover his laptop camera with gaffer tape. Has anyone got the reason why he does that?
Well, essentially, we learn that Alan's been walking around his house with nothing below the waistline. So no trousers or pants, because he's enjoying getting air to his genitals.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That kind of reminds me of the bit in I, Partridge, where he says that on Christmas Day he likes to walk around or like pomp around in just a dressing gown listening to...
Yeah,
that kind of reminded me of that. He quite often likes to state that he likes walking around his house either in a state of undress or semi-undress.
And he also told us that he likes sleeping without trousers on as well. So
there's a nice bit of Alan, yes, Coogan, no, where he says he uses the Guardian to put down if he wants to pop his genitals down. So rather than mark any surface, he'd rather just rest his balls on a copy
and
of the Guardian.
And ended up getting a crick in his neck and a print of Alistair Darling on his backside.
Print of Alistair Darling on my backside! Now, that is very similar to the kind of Access to Dixon's cadence in his voice and delivery, but always funny, still always enjoy that.
We learn it's been at least a year since Alan saw a sexy film, and he goes on to describe Benny Hill as well as basically being a series of sexual assaults speeded up to jaunty music. Jesus, Benny, you're going to ruin your career.
Benny, what are you doing?
I think that is brilliant when he's talking about Confessions of Window Cleaner, saying, oh, it's a long time since I've seen one. at least a year. It's kind of, it's such an obvious gag, but also it's brilliant. You'd think he's going to say, yeah, I haven't watched one since like the 80s or something, but it's been at least a year.
It reminds me a bit of the pregnant pause where he's counting out the eggs he puts in Seldom's pan of eggs when he's like 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and two more make 16.
I guess that's quite an easy gag to do when you're just playing with the audio format as well, that kind of pregnant pause that leads on to something else.
Yeah, couldn't have been done in the novels, I suppose, which is why they've used it quite a bit. Now they've got to audio only. There's another Doc Martens reference. We had one earlier in the series with him conflating the idea of wearing Doc Martens with basically being a hardcore punk. But then he realised that he's actually referring to it because he's been enjoying Doc Martin with Martin Clunes.
I thought it's kind of interesting. So because we did discuss the Doc Martens thing, that was episode 6, school speech, when he says, "Get back in your box, copper." Oh, don't know where that came from. Must be the Dr. Martin shoes I'm wearing. It's kind of interesting that then doesn't get referenced again until episode 17. So I wonder. I'd be really interested to know whether they were always planned to be in this order, these episodes. Not that something like him wearing Dr. Martens is like a massive payoff that really does anything to the narrative, but it is just interesting how it's such a throwaway reference in episode 6, but then we have quite a significant segment about it in episode 17.
I think we know enough about the Gibbons writing style to know that it moves and shifts and changes, and there probably are a couple of gags that suffer as a result of the movement, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's maybe something like that. I was also going to say, like, sort of related to this is, you kind of, like, you know, he's wearing Doc Martens, he's watched Doc Martin the show. It reminded me of kind of, you know, I think it's in this time when he talks about Seal and Ice Pups. He's like, I can't remember why I thought of Seal, and then he goes, ah, I can remember why, when he's talking about the Ice Pups and the music of Seal, just linking those two things together. I can very much imagine Alan, you know, it's watching Doc Martens and then it's buying Doc Martens.
Very literal thinking.
Yeah, because the key line is that he's suddenly got an urge to buy them. But as we know, he's already worn them earlier in the series. So that does kind of suggest, is he saying buy them for the first time, or is he saying buy another pair? I guess it's kind of open to interpretation. Or maybe, does it suggest that the episodes were originally in a different order, or whether this is just a clip or a section that has been moved around?
I guess that's an interesting point, because I guess there are quite a few sections that could actually go into almost any episode. And in fact, the next bit I have in my notes is when Alan's talking about eggs. And I actually thought that would have fitted in quite well into the Dreams episode where Alan's talking about eggs. So it's almost like, you know, did the Gibbons and Steve have like a whole page of kind of egg chat and just split it across a few different episodes or something? They could work it like that.
Or Steve just kind of riffs on egg chat and then they kind of...
he's got his Doc Martens on. He even rolled his jeans up. He's got that punk rock spirit. And he says, basically, he's like, he didn't do anything too crazy, but he did go on the grass at Hampton Court Palace. I mean, so the fact he's even at Hampton Court Palace, you know, rules him firmly out of punk category here. And it almost made me, I mean, this is perhaps an obscure reference outside of the hosts of this podcast, but it made me think a bit about the episode of Nevermind the Buzzcocks that Donnie Tourette's on. And he lights up a fag to sort of illustrate his punkness. And then you've got Simon Amstel going, Donnie is smoking now,
a cigarette such a rebel that you can legally buy in shops.
I think we should dig out that clip and post it on our socials, because that is fantastic.
Always happy to share that post. Share that video.
The other points that Alan makes about having the punk rock spirit, but he won't be spitting or saying vulgar things about royals, but then it transpires he will say rude things about Henry VIII. I really enjoyed this bit of script here when he says he's an awful man. Keep it in your pants, fatty. Not you. Morning. Just passed a fat man there. Good that he's out walking, though. I thought that was so good.
He then goes for a relaxing lean on his mate Chris's gate, which I like. He goes, I'll text him later. Hi, Chris. Lean on your gate.
And after he's dispatched that text, I think we're on to more egg chat. Like I was saying, it felt like this is quite a good companion piece to Alan talking about the delivery of fresh eggs in the Dreams episode. So for Alan, this is one of the small issues that he has to deal with in life, that he believes you shouldn't refrigerate eggs. And also the same applies to tomatoes.
I was curious as to whether this was something that you, Tom Stapp, would enjoy, because it's one of those kind of like laboured, detailed like jokes where he's going into quite a lot of detail. So I was curious as to whether this was one that you enjoyed or perhaps less of a fan of.
No, not really.
It's not for me.
I'm consistent.
I thought if it was to do with condiment and egg storage, that it might be more up your alley. But no, sadly not.
Well, Tom does famously hate eggs, so.
I famously
hate eggs. Why is my hatred not famous?
We're the Egg Hate Brothers.
Yeah, you've not been as vocal of it as Tom.
I haven't been as vocal. No, I don't go to the support groups, and I haven't taken part in any of the protests.
Do we need to run a poll with our listeners? Do you like eggs? Yes or no?
Well, the answer is going to be overwhelmingly yes. I understand that I am in the minority here when it comes to egg hatred. It's just although 50% of the group.
Yeah,
in this case.
Maybe you're not. Yeah. Right, Nick.
Yeah,
Nick,
maybe.
Set up the poll. Make it happen.
I should make it so.
There's a brilliant audio. There's a brilliant audio gag at this point that I wonder if anyone else noticed, that when he's reading, he's sort of giving his argument and facts about eggs and the different temperatures and the percentage chance of an increase in bacteria and things like that. He reads it out quite eloquently, and then you hear just the very faint sound of the scrunching of a piece of paper at the end, which makes it obvious that all of that information he's just read off something that he's printed or written down. He didn't know it. He actually took it out with him, read it, and then you just hear him scrunch up the paper and throw it away when he's finished talking.
Spot that.
Very good.
As he says, a chilled egg is not a safe egg. And then he goes straight on to the directly related Greg Wallace.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of eggs, it's Wallace chat.
Now, I would say that I'm slightly surprised Wallace hasn't been targeted by Partridge beforehand, because it does seem like the perfect person for Alan to have some sly digs at. Big sort of character in a big popular program. He is perfect. Alan,
especially when you've got the likes of Nick Knowles and Dom Littlewood. He's a shoo-in.
I was going to say he's kind of the almost like more up to date incarnation of a Dom Littlewood, because Dom Littlewood isn't really much represented now. Whereas I think, hopefully, I speak for most people when you're like, how is Greg Wallace a mainstream presenter on TV? I just genuinely do not understand anyone that sees any kind of appeal in him. But hey, the BBC clearly do.
But Nick, both you and I religiously watch MasterChef. Though. Still watching.
Oh God, yeah, I'll always watch it.
I love MasterChef so much. It's so good. The best.
I enjoyed Alan's gripe here. So why does Greg Wallace get to drive a better Vauxhall than him? And particularly descripting like the kind of repetition. Genuinely, why is that? I want to know why that is.
Yeah, he was told, wasn't he, at the dealership that celebrities can only go up to a certain make or model for a discount or a freebie. But then it turns out that Greg has been granted a better model than Alan, and that's really stuck in his craw.
So is it time to move on to Alan, who goes out into the countryside with his big notebook to ponder the big issues? He talks about how he might one day donate this book to the British Library, or just a library, anyone that will take it, but ideally the British Library. And then basically goes on to tell us about how one of the pages just has a doodle of a Dracula. So a nice kind of like callback to Dracula. With a big head and blood dribbling from his teeth. So it's a big head and a small man's body. And you just think, would the British Library really have any interest in this?
And please don't forget that there is also a drawing of a naked woman. It is quite tasteful. And then he says, this one is reclining, this one is on all fours.
I think it's worth making the point as well. So, because Alan's been talking about these kind of issues, so like the eggs and tomatoes being in the fridge being a small issue, Greg Wallace getting to drive a bigger, better car than him is a medium-sized issue. He does say that because he deals with all these things, all these thoughts, there's no time left to deal with the big issues. So just kind of a real suppression of the proper anxiety and stress-inducing problems that he has.
We've also glossed over the fact that he's planning to give Lynn power of attorney. He says, our power of attorney, Lynn, she'll love that. She'll absolutely love that.
You're saying he's not dealing with any big issues here. I would argue a strong counter to that. a strong counter. Well, no, okay, yeah, so good point. Yeah, he does say he's not dealing with some big issues, but he does ask two big questions. Imagine a, well, it's not a question, a statement. Imagine a world without Costa Coffee, and why are doors called doors?
Yeah, I love that with imagine a world without Costa Coffee, he follows it up by, not very nice, is it? Yeah. And then he says of that concept, some ideas go nowhere, but that's a good one.
It reminded me of the Blackbird Goodbrook song, where it's like, what would life be without Tesco's? What would life be without trees? Like,
worse.
That kind of like...
Better!
Yeah, better!
It's complicated. It's complicated.
And I like that he does a thing that basically I think probably everyone's done at some point, which is to just overthink the pronunciation of a word until it's kind of lost all meaning and he's become untethered with reality. And he's like, why are doors called doors? Doors. 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 For ages.
The other one's fridge as well, which I agree with. I actually tried that one. It does go a bit... I've definitely done this, but I think a lot of people do.
I like that when he does this as well, he's like, oh no, I don't like that. He's really unsettled himself with it. The other bit I liked in the diary is when he reads out, and there's this bit here, boat show, not sure what that was about.
Yeah.
Probably the boat show that you went to in Southampton or was meant to go to in Southampton.
Exactly. And he says, I can't remember the group he's referring to, but he says, people say they were thieves, but so was Robin Hood. In fact, I think he was prince of them. So again, getting all of his facts and ideas from Hollywood films, basically.
And also... kind of, it's that thing, and I think we've had this a few times in this series. He seems to think Robin Hood is definitely a historical figure. I think there's a bit of dispute about that. He seems to conflate factual and fictional people.
Mm.
Is it time to meet Morris?
Yeah.
I think it's time to discuss Morris.
He's injured.
Where's your mum,
he's
mate?
He's flapping. I think this basically, I think, you know, what transpires between the rest of this episode and the rest of the next, the whole of the next episode is basically Alan is just kind of clinging onto some kind of regular company and he's looking for some purpose and finds it in the process of trying to heal poor injured Morris. So, yeah, this is where we start moving into the poignancy that Adam referred to earlier.
Although I would argue that his initial response to finding Morris is more that he's glad that he's found a use for the nest of old cables and wires that he's got at home. It seems it will make a great nest, even though it's basically made out of plastic.
I also like that he felt the need to reassure Morris that the house is quite big and it's all en suite.
Yeah.
As if he's going to be making any use of these facilities.
Quite big because I work in television. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And then digging back into the fact that he gets most of his information about how to behave and how to act from films, he says to Morris the Bird, come with me if you want to live. Always wanted to say that.
So good. So Morris is sitting, when Morris gets to the Oast House, he seems to basically take up perch on the memoir of Ian Duncan Smith. Now, I don't think Ian Duncan Smith actually has published a memoir. I did a bit of searching and couldn't find evidence of that. However, he has published a fiction novel.
I thought you'd say a children's book.
Yeah.
So in 2003, he published a book called The Devil's Tune. It has only achieved a 2 out of 5 star rating on Amazon. May I please share with you some of my favourite 1 star reviews?
Oh, yes, do
it. Okay. A truly terrible book, utterly devoid of merit, written by a truly terrible person, utterly devoid of merit. Apart from that, it was fine. Pure and utter tripe, not even any good as toilet paper. And I had to perform brain surgery on myself to delete this novel from my head. A major contender for the most incoherent, dull, predictable mess of a novel ever foisted on a long-suffering public. Bonus information. Went down a bit of a rabbit hole here. Did you guys know, also, Boris Johnson published a novel in 2005?
I literally just saw that because I'm on the Amazon profile page for The Devil's Tune, and it saw customers who bought this item also bought.
So it's called 72 Virgins, and so we can move on. I'll just give you my favourite 1-star review of this book. Oh dear, poorly written and a bit racist.
Wow.
Not my words, the words of somebody on Amazon.
Yeah.
There we go. So Alan has a nice bit of chat about Ian Duncan Smith's autobiography, saying that, you know, although Morris is sitting on it, he seems to have no interest in it, much like many people. Perhaps magpies are not that different from you and I, after all, which I enjoyed.
I love that he kind of draws parallels between the two of them. He's like, you know, you're vulnerable. You'll show them one day, Morris. You'll show them you're nobody's fool. One day you will soar. You really are a good television presenter.
Yeah, so good. You won't be silenced. Still up there.
I like this gradual transition from him talking to Morris to essentially coaching himself out loud. Like, he converts Morris to himself.
I feel like this is the scene that really is telling us what this entire series is about. You know, if there is an overriding theme, it's Alan kind of trying to convince himself, but also sort of deluding himself that he's really happy when he clearly is very lonely. And a lot of it is about dating, and it's about connection with other people, and it's eventually about connecting with any living thing he can find.
Crucially, his grandkids as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and kind of dismissing or downplaying like the need for therapy and trying to do meditation but doing it badly, and relaxing at a spa but not being able to relax, and like just kind of not being able to get out of his own way.
There are also several times when he's basically saying, I've decided to be cheerful today. So yeah, this is basically the audio memoir of a man who's severely depressed. Great.
It seems that way. To the point that he now wishes to believe that Morris is actually John Meber, which gets very confusing.
This is clutching at straws as well. Like this is definitely a man losing his mind. He's like, is he a messenger from John, or perhaps it's John himself?
So
I definitely think it's descending into madness.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's definitely backed up by the fact that the food that he uses to try and coax him out, because Morris has gone off and hid somewhere, is seeds from the top of a seeded loaf, cucumber in case they like cucumber, a saucer of milk, and a lit cigarette.
The cigarette really made me laugh.
Brilliant.
Oh, I love that they're watching Formula One together as well. He's like, I'm watching Formula One with Morris sat on the arm of the chair. Like, what is going through Morris's mind? And this doesn't actually kind of resolve itself in any way, shape or form, but I was concerned throughout this that Seldon would make more of an appearance and there would be a bit of a bloodbath.
So there is a slight concern that Alan, I guess, maybe has to kind of dispose of Morris, because he's quite hurt and may not recover. So I have a question to the group. Has anyone had to dispose of a bird that maybe a cat has brought into the house? And please go into detail on how you did it. Adam, let's start with you.
Hello. Yes. My cat once mauled a starling, I believe. Not entirely to death, but certainly to the brink of death. And we had a very heated conversation on the Monkey Tennis WhatsApp group about what fate should befall this, I would say, mortally wounded bird. So ultimately I compromised by wrapping it up in a tea towel so that
still
it was
alive.
Warm. Yeah. And putting it on a bird table out of the cat's reach to try and recover. I went out half an hour later and retrieved its corpse. Popped that in the bin, and that was the end of that.
Popped it in the bin.
I'm pretty sure one of you suggested taking it to the vet.
Take him to the vet. I won't get him back.
Yeah, that's very much what most people on Twitter are saying. So one guy says bin it,
which is the advice that Adam heeded.
That's Adam. That's what Adam would do. I love the fact that one guy just says get another one and breed them. Yeah. It's just like, you know, profiting.
Not even that. I think his phrasing was more sinister. It was get another
make
one and
them
make
breed.
Them breed.
There is one detail which we've skipped over, which ties in when Alan lit the cigarette for Morris. So the cigarettes were left by the dog groomer because she left the house after a blazing row about Crofts. So does this mean that the relationship with the dog groomer that has been developing throughout this series, that is now over?
Does it also mean if she's left her fags in the house that it's the end of a... He had a year previous to the dog groomer with somebody who he didn't have sex with.
Yes.
Presumably he has now slept with the dog groomer on the third date for these fags to be around his house in the first place.
I'd assume so. And there's, I think in the final episode, there's a bit of chat about two coffee cups out in the morning, but we'll get to that as well. Yeah.
Alan refers to a number of programs and films where a person has some sort of relationship with a bird, or I think some people suggest some on Twitter. One is obviously Kez, which he pronounces Kess, which I thought was quite fun.
Yes,
another one that someone suggested on Twitter to him was Birds of a Feather, which I liked because he said it's not relevant irrelevant. It's a comedy. Well, at least it's listed in the Radio Times as a comedy. a nice dig there. And then High Noon tweets, obviously the recurring troll, but he's taken a bit of a turn, and it seems that he actually loves magpies. He's trying to help Alan, and quite a sort of cordial conversation emerges. At this point, someone had suggested this to us on Twitter, but I did think it myself at this point. Could it have been that High Noon was actually Bill Oddie?
Well, let's see what let's see what transpires next week. Let's not give that game away. But yeah, I love how this plays out, that you've got Alan kind of reading out his tweets, which are obviously High Noon is giving him useful tips, solid kind of magpie or bird knowledge. But then Alan's kind of giving this narration, which is totally opposite to that. So saying this guy just can't help himself. Oh, hang on, here we go. All right. Two can play at that game. Thank you. I really love the kind of dichotomy of that.
Yep. There's definitely a change in tone there, isn't there? And just before the end of the episode, Alan makes the distinction between disabled pirates who are good and Somali pirates who are not good. I think, as from what we know about Alan, probably his only knowledge of Somali pirates would have come from watching Captain Phillips.
100%.
I don't think that he has got any further intel on that. We learn that Seldom has been locked out of the room that Morris is in to avoid the bloodbath that Nick was fearing. One line I really enjoyed is that he says of Seldom, he has to learn other people matter, even if they're birds. Now, there are three people in that situation. There's Seldom a dog. And then there's Morris, a bird, and Alan's phrase is, he has to learn other people matter. So, I mean, I suppose it kind of feeds into what we're talking about, that he's so starved for attention and he's sort of quite lonely that he's now kind of, what's the word, anthropomorphizing, if I can say that, about both Morris and Seldom, transplanting personalities onto them, seeing them as people, imagining them kind of having conversations with each other and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and pretty much every time Seldom is talked about in this series, he's very humanized, isn't he? And like we've talked about, he basically runs the household anyway.
Yeah. And things like him giving up his bath and saying, it's your bath. Yeah. And believing that rather than Seldom reacting to the word spam, if he says no spam, that Seldom will understand that distinction and then not be excited by the word spam anymore. Very funny.
I was going to say, I had one more note before we probably wrap up. When Alan's getting the Twitter suggestions back about what to do with the magpie, and the last one about taxidermy, and he says that's a bit off beam, he then says, I love this because it's such a throwaway line, but it kind of says so much about when we always talk about the kind of his listenership. He says it reminds him of when he did a phone in about refugees and people sent in things like closed door. It's such a throwaway line, but it tells you a lot about who his listeners are, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And crucially, not just North Norfolk Digital listeners, but the condensed listeners that are just fans of Alan. That brings us to the end of Morris's rescue. And we're almost at the end of the series. So to let you know how Monkey Tennis is going to go over the next few weeks. Next week, we're going to tackle episode 18, High Noon, and then tell you a little bit about our thoughts from the Oast House in general. And then following that, we would love to hear from you. So send us in your feedback and we'll be putting together a very special feedback episode. What would a series of Monkey Tennis be without you, our listeners? So please do let us know what you think about From the Oast House and any Partridge news or tidbits in general. On Instagram, you can get in touch at Monkey Tennis Pod, on Twitter at The Partridge Pod, facebook.com/The Partridge Pod. You can email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. You can send us a WhatsApp voice note on 07923 600 017. Please do email or voice note us your renditions of the From the Oast House theme tune, and we'll be compiling some of those towards the end of the series as well. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please do consider either dropping us the price of a cup of coffee at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis, or giving us a good review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts as it is now, or any other podcast providers, because it does help us reach more people and bump us up the charts too. So we'll be back with the tantalizingly titled High Noon next week, but for now, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey Tennis,
bring
fireworks. Dumb my cup out.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey Tennis,
ready steady fuck off.
Scratch me.
Are you being served?
Monkey Tennis,
excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle.
Monkey Tennis,
absolutely.
Generally I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey Tennis,
why not consider chips?
chips.
You must come and stay in the barn.
Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the Oast House.
Keep it down, love.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.